Well, g'day folks. Today we're joined by Lance Piccioni. He played 77 games of AFL for the Adelaide Crows, Hawks, and the Roos back in the day. But now he's doing something very important to do with mental health, and that is Love Me, Love You. We'll find out more about that, plus much more on Legends with Bevo.
Welcome to Legends with Bevo. Thanks to The Holdy, Coopers, Anytime Fitness Glenelg, and Paradise Mazda. And now, here's your host, Bevo.
Lance Piccioni, great to have you on Legends and Bevo for a chat, mate. How are you going at the moment over there in Melbourne? It's pretty cold here in Adelaide, that's for sure.
Bevo, not too bad here. I've got the heater on. I wish I could take the heater with me when I go outside, but going all right. It's just we're working out what this new world is delivering to us at the moment. So it's just mostly like everybody else, understanding the restrictions of late. But we as a family transitioned into it pretty smoothly. It's just what this new world is presenting us is a range of challenges that hopefully we never have to go through again.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. And Love Me, Love You, you've got the banner there in the background, mate. So it's going very, very nicely. Tell us all about it, those people that don't know about it.
Yeah, we're going all right. We're busy. Obviously, the mental health space, we're a mental health education and support program that goes into schools, sports and community clubs, workplaces, just delivers a whole range of education and training programs around, trying to create a more positive mental health space for people to understand. We have a support pathway program which helps people navigate through the mental health system. And that's what we do. I myself deliver probably 250 times a year to a range of groups and organizations across the country. Love what we do. It's all based on my lived experience and a story that a lot of people are able to tell as well now. Living with mental illness, being a drug addict and nearly suiciding just over 8 years ago. And we just thought about the idea of, when I started the organisation just over 6 years ago, it was to make sure that people don't go through what I did. And that's what we do. And it drives us every day to hopefully make that difference in people's lives.
And obviously, well done on that. And obviously overcoming those terrible, terrible things we'll talk about in a moment, mate. But for those people out there that are going through a tough time at the moment, obviously there's Lifeline and, it's so sad to hear these people losing their jobs and what have you. Myself personally, I've had all my jobs put on hold and had to get a job in a supermarket. But, hey, there's people in much worse situation than me out there. But what advice do you have for those people that are going through a tough time at the moment, mate?
I think it's actually really putting your hand out and asking for help, because there's a range of support services available to us and there's always a way forward. There's a range of issues. You talk about employment, which is, a big part of people's identity that has been taken away from them and forced takeaway. And, that is an experience that we hopefully we don't have to go through, but there are avenues for people to engage in. But the financial stress, I think that's been the biggest component. The financial stress that this situation's put on a lot of people, and we've just got to adapt and find different ways. As you said yourself, you've had to transition into a workspace that you never thought that you would be in. But there are still opportunities for people to engage in that thing. And I think what it's actually done for a lot of us is actually created an opportunity for people to put these understanding of their self-care, what investment they're putting into themselves through a whole range of different practices in terms of mindfulness and gratitude and all those things, which, can be a tricky sort of conversation to have with people, let's show the gratitude, when there's, for some people, there's not much to be grateful for, but the fact that, we're still alive and it's actually trying to create that simple approach to what are the things that we are grateful for. And that's, having family and friends around us and having opportunities to still have a hot meal, having the opportunity to sleep in a bed at night. I think for me, it's created a great opportunity to understand how to slow down. And I think that's the biggest thing is helping people understand how we're actually slowing down and putting back into ourselves a little bit. Okay. Because we are in a space in this world that, before COVID hit that was, you know, everything is about giving to others and fast pace and trying to create so much busyness in our life. And then being busy was a, you know, it was a badge of honor. But I said, if they're trying to slow down and trying to understand how you fill up your own tank, with the simple practices, you know, the simple investments and embracing the gratefulness of actually being alive, I think. I think that's the biggest thing for people to understand, that, you know, we are still alive. There are people a lot worse off, but it's not to be grateful for the fact that you are better than, you're in a better position than them. You're just in a position yourself, and bringing it back to that.
Yeah, well said. And obviously you can only control your own destiny as well, mate, like I said. Let's go down the dark path, I suppose, of your own situation, mate. You played the 77 games of AFL. When did you start taking drugs, and when did the mental health sort of issues start happening with you?
Mental health issues trace back from my early teenage years. A range of anxiety, and this is the tricky space that we live in and that I live in, because a lot of these issues went undiagnosed for a long time. Okay, so it's just looking, when I say anxiety was a part of my life as a teenager, like most other teenagers growing up, I wasn't any different to anybody else in terms of the social challenges that come with life. But, you know, not dealing with it, not reaching out, not understanding why certain things were happening to me, created a level of emotional distress, we'll call. So dealing with anxiety through that. But playing footy was my thing, you know, and that was the biggest thing for me. I had that escape, and I had that outlet, and I had that place of belonging and being a part of the club, which allowed me to get through my life. And fully putting my investment into footy and playing footy in the way I did was my outlet, because the anxiety that was building up and manifesting so much larger, there's a lot of anger and a lot of anger that came with that. And I dealt with that on the footy field the best way I could. And that was to play physically and to create a sense of feeling in how I did that. And then I got drafted to Adelaide, spent a couple of years in Adelaide, with the Adelaide Crows there, mainly at Glenelg rather than Adelaide. Alcohol crept into my life, and I never really drank before then, because that wasn't my life. And I got into this big party lifestyle when I was in Adelaide, which was my escape, which then became my escape, which is the issue. Early in my early 20s, my grandpa died, and not dealing with the grief of that, or not dealing with the process or the stages of grief that we were allowed to, that the anxiety then sort of took over, and then depression was taking over. And in those real dark periods of life, which is the understanding is that, which when we talk about people with depression or a mental illness, is that we think when I say it takes over, that it takes over the color that's in the people's picture. Okay, so this life is full of color and the opportunities that that arise for us. But I was functioning and I was still living and still living this dream of playing AFL footy. But I just didn't see any. There was no enjoyment in it. There's no enjoyment in what life was about, and that sort of obviously that played out into my performance, in terms of my ability to play and perform in that space, but also my ability to play and perform in what we call life, or off the footy field, and not dealing with it, not talking about it, because that's what we did. We weren't allowed to. It wasn't as much we weren't allowed to, but society didn't accept the fact that, okay, you're going through some crap, and you didn't have the types of conversations that about your emotional distress and working through that process. But then I started taking substances in my last year. I was at North Melbourne. I started dabbling pretty heavily in substances when I was playing at North Melbourne. And escaped the system. And then I finished when I was 25 at North Melbourne and turned into a full-time high-functioning drug addict, pretty much. So And, you know, that came a range of dark periods in my life. And, you know, I don't really remember a lot of my late 20s, just due to the fact that a lot of it was hazy, and extremely hazy, because there wasn't too many days that went by that I didn't use something. But that was my world, and that's what I was dealing with, and that was my journey. And, you know, I understand what that did for me now. And, you know, learnings that I took from that is that capacity to put some positive self-investment, you know, understand what I'm doing for myself every single day and how I cope with the daily stresses of life, you know, and process that for me, and not what I was doing when I was playing footy, was processing a lot of my life for others. And then the satisfaction and the enjoyment for others, and you know, and bringing that back and creating some real self love, and really getting sort of deep in myself, and, you know, doing some real big soul searching in my early 30s to understand what my life could be and the opportunities that my life could have. So, yeah.
And how did you turn things around, mate? Was there sort of a friend or someone that sort of you spoke to about this? Because, yeah, you mentioned at the start you're suicidal, which is just horrible yep. situation. Was
there
someone that you turn to?
So I attempted suicide. I was what I call 3 inches from death in late October 2011. And I was up on this roof for hours, I remember, and it was just the position of, I don't belong here, I'm not needed in this world. And it was that crazy cycle of thoughts that was happening at that time. And I got down, I think I was about there for about 4 hours, and getting down and taking that step was that first step that I needed for myself, and realizing the fact that I deserve to be here. I belong to this world, and I can have an impact on my own world, a positive impact. And it was the first conversation I had with my my wife. So it was with my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, and the mother of my two boys, was just that simple conversation of her saying to me that she'd noticed that I wasn't myself. And, you know, I had been myself for a long time. So I didn't actually know what being myself was. You know, but it was that simple part of that conversation and that non-judgmental conversation that she had with me, not just that next day, but over the period of our relationship, and creating a level of acceptance into myself to say that I'm all right. You know, I'm good here. And having those conversations with her, and then her, you know, saying to me, and this is the biggest thing, I think, I mean, talking with supporting with other people, is that she said to me, she goes, "Oh, what do you want to do? What do you want to do with that?" You know, like it's great to, you know, tell the story and process the information out. But then it's, what are we going to do with that? And her asking me, "What do you want to do with that?" It put back onto me about taking that choice and making that choice to say, I want to get better. You know, I want to feel good. I want to, you know, I've got things to do. And, you know, we put the plan in place. I had to reach out to, I had a trusted doctor who I now still see regularly, Dr. Con Metropoulos, who was my North Melbourne doctor at AFL level. And the relationship I had with him was at that capacity, which created it was a safe and trusting relationship that I had with him. And I had that place to go to and had that person to go to. And I just unleashed on him. And said everything that was going through, what had happened, the experiences, blah, blah, blah. And then we put the plan in place. And I went and saw a range of psychologists over a period of the next few months that I didn't have positive engagement with. And not to say that they weren't any good at what they did, I just didn't connect. And then I was ready to give up again. And my wife said to me, and she goes, "Well, we got this far. Let's see what else is out there." So I went and connected into a psychiatrist at the Melbourne Clinic, which is a big mental health and drug rehab clinic here in Melbourne. And, you know, I connected with this person and put my everything into it, and unwinding everything that was. And we talk about when people with mental health challenges, it's about not treating the effect, it's about treating the cause. So what's an underlying cause of why you've got to that position? So went through the whole process of what life was and how I experienced it and how I felt with everything, and then put the plans in place and made some lifestyle choices to create my life again.
Well done to you, mate. That's sensational stuff. And, you know, like I said before, life is so precious, and I learned that sadly this week because I lost a friend of mine, just got hit on his bike, push bike over in Northern Territory. You might have heard about it.
Yeah, I heard about it, yeah.
Alex Riccio, yeah. It was a mate of mine. He was one that, you know, this chewing the fat, we started 2 years ago, obviously now Legends of Bevo, and he's one of the first guests, and, you know, we had some great times together. So it just makes you appreciate, mate, how precious life is. So I'm glad you turned things around, and done to you. That's so gutsy.
It is, mate, and this is the thing. You might not have your tomorrow, and this is the thing we need to understand as people and as a community, that, you know, we need to make every experience every day as positive as possible. And it's not to say, okay, don't live it like it's your last, but live it like it is your now. And I think that's what we need to understand. And it can be taken away from you. And opportunities of life everything in a part of our life can be taken away from you like that. And we can go from hero to zero in a flash. But, you know, as a community, as people, we need to make sure that we are supporting each other and engaging each other as much as we possibly can, so that we can all grow together and we can all thrive in this thing we call life, and understand that the challenges will hit, and they will. And, you know, we're not invincible in this world. But if we keep putting that self-love and self-care, you put that investment into yourself and what you're doing, and adjust and take those challenges on and use those challenges as opportunities to shine. And I think that's the biggest thing. And that's what I looked for in my life, is that, you know, from the darkest of places, you'll find the brightest of lights. These experiences that you see here and right now, the quicker you learn from them and adapt and adjust and make sure it works for you, you know, the better off we're going to be. We can keep playing the victim in this world, and that's the thing. And a lot of people do it, and it creates. And it's actually a lot easier to play the victim, okay? But if you keep playing the victim, we're not going to move forward, and you're not going to move forward as an individual and in your community. So we need to, you know, create the understandings of shit's hit the fan, 100%. But what am I going to do with it? And how am I going to do it? And then if I don't have the answers, who can help me? And putting yourself in a position to you know, ask for some help, because especially males, mate, it's a conversation. Asking for help is a really difficult thing, you know, because testosterone blocks our emotional capacity in that space, you know, because we have such proud individuals, and then we see that as a sign of I can't deal with it. But it's not about can't dealing with it. It's just, how can I deal with it? But who do I need to be a part of that?
Yeah, well, absolutely well said there, mate. Now let's go back to your footy career. Let's talk about some positive stuff.
I'm still waiting for my Hall of Fame invite, Bebo. Still waiting.
My Hall of Fame, mate, that's for sure. Hey, 77 games of footy, as I mentioned. You had a bit of a tough run with the Crows, and you had some really good footy with the Hawks, and you played a few seasons and then end up at the Roos. Talk us through some of your toughest opponents and some of the best players that you played with, mate.
My toughest opponent that I ever played against, and I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity of playing AFL. It was a dream from a young child, but I was always destined to play AFL. You know, like I was having conversations with clubs when I was 13 years of age about what the AFL system was going to be like, and you know, so I was pretty. I thought I was always going to be there, but when I got there, it was the biggest wake-up call. You know, you're not playing against boys, because I was early developer. I was a man playing against boys as a junior, but then going up into the AFL ranks and just walking, my first experiences of walking into the Adelaide Crows training room, you know, and you're seeing blokes like Andrew McLeod and Sean Wren was in there, and Darren Jarman and Mods was in there, and it was just like, wow, you know, this is pretty cool. This is pretty amazing. And then you're training, and, you know, and I always say that, you know, my first session, I'll give you, this is my example of my first session I rocked up to. It was the a few days after my last year 12 exam, and I had packed up, ready to go, get straight into it. I was greeted by the media crew, which at that time in 1997, into 97, was, I think, about four cameras strong, not like it is these days. But that experience, and then straight to training, kitted up. And my first day of training was a 7K run, 7K time trial, and two 2K time trials. Oh. So it was welcome, mate, and good luck. So, but you know, that was a great experience. But then I, my greatest challenging opponent was actually when I was in Adelaide, I did a lot of one-on-one work with Andrew McLeod. So this is not even on game day. So I did a lot of one-on-one work with Andrew McLeod, who I still regard as probably the best player that I played with, because he just made the game look like you were playing it on a computer. He was amazing in everything that he did, and skill level and everything that went with it. So, but you know, life as a football player, you know, and trying to find your place in that world, and trying to say that I belong here, it was always a challenging experience. But you know, when I played the four games at Adelaide, and there were four of the first six games of my first year, and didn't play after that. And then when I went to Hawthorn, and that same experience of walking to the change rooms and seeing these superstars that you're supposed to be amongst, you know, and one of the first guys I met there was Shane Crawford, and that was just after he'd obviously won the Brownlow that year. So it was like, wow, you know, what's going on here? And you know, but you know, I loved it. And the story that I tell about one of my first games when I was in Adelaide was against the West Coast Eagles, and I went onto a half forward line, and I was picked up by John Worsfold, who will go down as the top five toughest blokes that ever played the game. And he and I was running around like a young buck, as you do, thinking I don't want to go anywhere near this guy. And I kept running around like a headless chook, and then he got me one time, and he grabbed my jumper, and he said, "Don't run away anywhere." You know, along this, with you know, a few more profanities than that. "Come here, little, you know, you little so and so." Grabbed my mouth guard out of my mouth, and went and punched me straight in the face. And I was like, okay. And so what I did was picked up my mouth guard, pretended to give him a little punch back, and ran away, and didn't see him for the rest of the game. So, but it's you know, then you, I sort of thought, oh well, this is what you got to deal with. You know, you're playing against these players that this is how you play, and the toughness of playing footy in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, there were some players that, you know, you don't want to run into in a dark alley that you were having to line up against. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah, it must have been very, very brutal, that's for sure, mate. In terms of some of the funniest teammates that you've had at the three different clubs over the years, who are some of those?
Funniest or characters, whatever you want to call them. Tony Modra was, he'll go down as one of the most bizarre characters you'll ever meet in your life when I was in Adelaide. But he was the king, you know, in Adelaide, for the people that know him or experienced him, he's the king and still is the king, you know, in how he goes about life. And, you know, then I was at Hawthorn, Paul Salmon. I played with Paul Salmon, and for a man that was 6'10", he was one of the biggest jokers involved in footy than I was playing there. And you know, then there's some bizarre cats. Everyone is an interesting person in how they go about things. You know, I obviously had some experiences, you know, with, you know, blokes like Brent Harvey when I was at North Melbourne. He's a funny little cheeky little bugger that doesn't stop running. So you know, he can say anything he wants to, and you're never going to catch him to take it out on him. But I think Darren Jarman was an interesting cat, because this is a man that physically shouldn't have been able to play AFL at that level for so long, right? but he knew it. He knew exactly what it was, but he knew exactly what he was. So I think that understanding there, you know, but everyone had their different stories and things that go along with it. But, you know, and then it was, you know, the best person that I ever played with, I believe, was in terms of how they held themselves as character and as an individual, was Adam Simpson, who's now the West Coast Eagles coach. And the way that he went about himself as a footballer and leader of that club was an amazing experience. And everyone that knows him knows he's destined to be an unbelievable coach, just because of the way he relates to people and the way he connects with people. And his footy brain is on another level.
And three famous people you'd love to have dinner with, Lance. Who would they be?
Three famous people. Myself. I'm a big fan of basketball. Michael Jordan is definitely in my wish list. The Dalai Lama. I'd like to see what he's all about. If he's what he's like away from the what he's like away from the robes. And who else? Mate, sorry, you, Bevo. You're my third. I like my dad to be there. My dad, for those that don't know, was a socceroo. He was a professional soccer player. He was a superstar. You know, the stories that he would be able to share at that dinner experience with Michael Jordan and the Dalai Lama would be an interesting experience.
Yeah. No, I love it, mate. Lance Petroni, it's been a pleasure having you on Legends of Bevo today for a chat, mate. Well done with everything you've done. We'd love me, love you. Keep up the great work for that. We'll definitely give that a big plug on Facebook for you. Personally, for me and everyone else, well done on everything you've done to overcome your battles. It's a credit to you and to your family, and keep up the great work, mate. And look forward to having a beer with you one day when I'm over in Melbourne.
Beautiful. Appreciate it, Bevo. And thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.
Bye, mate. Bye.